is a far bigger win than we even expected. All five.
Your help, we're going to come back to Philadelphia for the Democratic National Convention.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is Wednesday, April 27th, 2016, 5:09. Welcome to another business day. Welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell. Lots to talk to you about today, including how the city planners are using data to monitor State Street and the Loop, and how they're using that to drive people there and keep it alive and active. That great State Street, coming up later on The Opening Bell. But first, we begin with WGN's Market Desk and your overnight global intel. Asian stocks mostly lower as an overnight surge in oil prices raises questions about the outlook for the energy sector. Investors are watching the outcome of a policy meeting by the U.S. Federal Reserve and Bank of Japan. The Fed expected to leave interest rates unchanged. The Bank of Japan could take new steps to stimulate Japan's economy. Japan's benchmark Nikkei lost about 0.5% overnight. Hang Seng also lost about 0.5%. Shanghai down as well. Australia also shed shares overnight on Wall Street yesterday. The Dow added about 13 points. It was a bloodbath of sorts yesterday for earnings. A lot of the big earners, a lot of the big companies reporting earnings after the bell. It was a frenzy. Apple among those says quarterly revenue fell for the first time in more than a decade as iPhone sales fell compared with a year ago. That's putting more pressure on the world's most valuable public company to come up with its next big product. If it can, Apple sold more than 51.2 million iPhones in the first part of this year, racking up about $10.5 billion in quarterly profits. That was more than analysts expected, but still less than the 61 million iPhones sold a year ago. Here's a CEO Tim Cook from an investor conference call.
iPhone sales come from three sources: customers who upgrade from previous iPhone models, customers who switch from Android and other operating systems, and customers who purchase a smartphone for the first time. As we look at each of these three sources of iPhone sales, we see a business that is healthy and strong.
The company's battling perceptions that its latest iPhones aren't dramatically different from previous models as overall smartphone sales are slowing around the world. This analyst about that next big thing at Apple says what a lot of people are thinking.
There's a natural life cycle for all things, for all of us, for all companies. To demand growth from a company of this size seems a little bit unrealistic. I would say demand efficiency and demand capital return and be, you know, a very shiny, nice value stock. There's nothing wrong with being a Buick.
Still, when I went to bed last night, Apple had lost about $30 billion in market capital after the bell and after earnings reported yesterday. Twitter also disappointed investors yet again. First quarter results that showed stagnant revenue growth as the microblogging service struggles to grab new users. It did grab some new users. Jack Dorsey, the CEO, sounding upbeat.
Twitter has always been the best place to see what's happening now, whether it's breaking news, entertainment, sports, or everyday topics. Only Twitter lets you connect with people anywhere in the world with live conversation. Think of President Obama congratulating Elon Musk on the historic SpaceX landing, or the world celebrating the legacy of the legendary artist Prince. Only Twitter lets you follow these historic moments, join in the conversation, and share it with others. We made a lot of progress on product innovation this quarter, particularly with live video and our refined timeline, and people love it, with less than 2% opting out. We remain focused on improving our service to make it fast, simple, and easy to use.
The company added about 5 million users in the first quarter. That wasn't enough to ease investors' concerns about the future going forward. Dorsey says it's going to be all about video and live going forward. As a matter of fact, they streamed yesterday's conference call with investors on Periscope. Twitter stock is much lower this morning compared to yesterday. Also yesterday, we saw some earnings come out from eBay. They did well. Buffalo Wild Wings did okay as well. Yesterday, we saw AT&T report earnings as well, but Apple and Twitter, the big ones among the big earners yesterday. It's 5:14 on the Opening Bell, and there's a new trend sweeping the country, and it's called simply souping.
Forget juicing. The newest health craze to hit Los Angeles is souping.
That is so delicious.
The humble soup.
It is real, and it's taking the place of cleansing, a juice cleansing. Dale Buss is a writer for Forbes magazine and brand channel. He's on the opening bell with us this morning. Dale, I'm having visions of soup going in places you don't want it to go in, but this is an actually eating soup thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, let's get that straight first of all. When you soup, you eat it. And the point is that juicing, which is supposed to be the way that Gwyneth Paltrow and other celebrities would like us to cleanse ourselves, dietarily speaking, is being supplanted by souping, which makes a lot of sense because juice, even at $9 a bottle, still only includes certain nutrients. You don't get the solids. You don't get fiber. You typically don't get protein. And a couple of women in Los Angeles, actually a lawyer and an investment banker were having lunch one day, and they had a bowl of soup, and they said, why can't we use soup for cleansing? You get fiber, you get protein, it's a food form that people are familiar with, and lo and behold, they started a company called Soup Pure, and now they're selling about $25,000 worth of soup in a cleansing regimen at about $7 or $8 a bottle of soup every week. It's a fast-growing phenomenon, and it kind of threatens the whole cleansing trend that took place a few years ago, and which actually caused companies like Coca-Cola, Hain's Celestial to buy startups in the juice cleansing business, and now they've got to be kind of wondering about those investments.
I have lots of questions. We're having a conversation with Dale Buss about souping. Souping is the new juicing. We'll have more of our discussion coming up.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program, 520. We're talking this morning, having a conversation about souping.
I describe it as health in a bottle because it is the way to get all the fruit, all the vegetables, all the minerals, all the vitamins that you need for a day. And you get it in a to-go form.
And in addition to being healthy, souping is convenient. However, some experts say that health trends like juicing and souping can be misleading.
It's a trend that started in California, spreading across the country. We're talking with writer Dale Buss about this at Dale D. Buss on Twitter. Dale, the question is, you mentioned earlier it takes quite a bit of soup to do this cleanse per day. Is there a certain type of soup that's better? Or is this a company, can you use Campbell's? Can you use a can of soup?
It doesn't take a lot necessarily. It's kind of one serving. I mean, and the startup called Soup Pure sells soup in bottles. And interestingly, it doesn't take a particular kind. You can do gazpacho, cold soup. You can do hot. If you go to the company's website, you know, there's a huge variety. You can probably do chicken noodle. The point is that soup is a common form of food to people. It's something they're comfortable with. And yet as a delivery vehicle for nutrients, let's say, it's a lot more effective than juice, or at least a lot more complete, because it does have fiber. You can put, you know, anything from potatoes to roast beef in soup, and so you get protein. And, you know, the whole idea of cleansing is that how do you make this something that mainstream American do? Well, part of the point, of course, is that you can. At $8 or $9 a bottle, juice cleansing has only been kind of an elitist phenomenon anyway. But I guess what's interesting here is if soup takes its place, then you have companies like Coca-Cola, Hain Celestial, that made investments in this area, whose investment now is endangered. And the interesting thing is, you mentioned Campbell. When I was looking into this, I've talked with Campbell, and they said, we're not really thinking about promoting souping at this point. We're kind of looking at it, but we're not going to do anything in particular about it, which I thought was very interesting.
The juicing industry is still very, very strong. Latest market research, and you write about this, shows that it's still a millions of dollars of industry every year. That's not something that's going away, is it?
No, absolutely not. I mean, we're talking about trends here. And based on my reporting for a story I did, actually for a trade magazine called New Nutrition Business. Juice cleansing is still a growing business, but the people I talked with said this is definitely peaking. It's kind of jumped the shark. It's like any other celebrity-driven trend, right? I mean, any kind of celebrity-driven diet, it can only go so far until it runs into the reality that, A, juice cleansing is very expensive, and B, you know, it's not necessarily all that effective.
And from a health standpoint, too, there have been concerns from the very beginning that juicing has a sugar component that is probably not very healthy. That's a complaint, also a selling point of the souping craze.
Yeah, real good point. For all the helpfulness that you think juice cleansing delivers, juice typically does have, you know, fructose because it's based on fruit juices, a lot of times vegetable juices as well, and that's definitely a component of the whole practice that nutritionists say, hey, may help you with cleansing, but A, there's no fiber, and B, there's lots of sugar. So that's where souping comes in.
Well, anybody who has a mother or grandmother knows that Campbell's soup does a body good is, I think, the slogan, and soup's always been something very healthy. But is it something that we're going to see at the replace the juice bars at our gyms and health clubs?
Replace? I don't know, but I'm pretty sure you're going to see souping bars. It only makes sense. And, you know, this is something that I do see a company as big as Campbell probably getting into in some way down the road. Campbell's been kind of turning itself over under CEO Denise Morrison, and I think they'll look at this, you know, sometime very soon and say maybe we can make a play here. Maybe not a Campbell soup bar, but I'm sure souping bars are going to be opening somewhere.
Well, and there are also a lot of competitors to Campbell Soup, too. I mean, there's Chunky and all of those others, too, so I can see them perhaps.
Progresso, yeah.
Yeah, sure. Is there a part of the country that this is growing faster in?
Well, as with most trends, typically it's growing faster on the coast. You mentioned California. It's trendy. That's where Soupure is based. So that's where this has taken off initially. But Soupure does sell all over the country online, and they're going to be on retail shelves soon. They haven't told me quite where, but I think even in Chicago, you'll probably be able to get Soupure, and you know, some other startup brand of souping will pop up as well.
This is another one of the stories where you have a couple of people who are having a lunch or a meal or something, and they come up with these billion-dollar ideas. This over what turned out to be a disappointing bowl of healthy soup.
Yeah, that's what's really interesting about the startups that have been turning the traditional food business upside down. You mentioned it comes from personal experience. Think of how many baby food companies came from mothers who were disappointed with what they could feed their kids. You know, a brand like Happy Baby, which is also called Happy Family, Plum Organics, that's where those startups come from, and that's why they so often resonate with consumers, because they're created by entrepreneurs who see a need that helps them personally, and you know, you translate that to millions of other consumers who have the same need.
Dale Buss, a writer for Forbes, Brand Channel, others as well, our in-house sort of brand and food reporter this morning, talking about the latest trend called souping. Souping is the new juicing. Dale, thanks for being with us today.
You bet.
You can find Dale on Twitter at Dale D. Buss. This is the opening bell, 527, over to the newsroom, where Vic Vaughn has a nice pot of soup going.
Yeah, we're watching developing news this morning in Paris, the investigation into the Paris attacks last November. We have new details on that. Also, the two frontrunners in the race for president both edged closer last night to locking up the nomination ahead of conventions. All that coming up, Steve.
All right, thanks, Vic. It's 528 on the opening bell.
From ABC News, tech trends, pulling the plug on electric cars. Researchers at Oak Ridge National Lab are working on a wireless option for recharging electric vehicles.
Because it's safe, it's convenient, it's highly efficient.
Omer Onar is one of the researchers on the project. He says the system uses a combination of magnetic fields and specialized electronics to deliver a charge. And while they've achieved 90% efficiency with a 20-kilowatt wireless charging system, Onar says the next step is a 50-kilowatt dynamic system.
The dynamic piece is really important. important because what that means is you can charge your electric vehicle on the go.
Meaning a delivery truck or shuttle bus, for example, could quickly recharge every time they make a scheduled stop.
You have a known route and you are spending a couple of minutes in every stop to unload and load the passengers.
This new technology can also help reduce the size and cost of the vehicle's battery, which is the most expensive component of an electric vehicle.
So with that, actually, you can travel more distances without stopping for refueling.
With Tech Trends, I'm Karen Chase, ABC News.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
It's 538. Welcome back to The Opening Bell. The Loop Alliance is an organization that's busy making sure we all know about the Loop and especially State Street, that great street. And we have one of the people who's in charge of that to talk to us today about where things are going. But we want to give you an idea first of what the Loop Alliance does.
You walk around the Loop and you'll see the CLA has touched almost every parcel of land in some way.
The city often seeks out the organization's feedback on plans it is considering before it takes action.
Chicago Loop Alliance is the only association to actively promote the economic interests of the State Street District and its CLA members who conduct business in the Loop.
Michael Edwards is the Loop Alliance Executive Director with us in studio this morning on The Opening Bell. Good morning, Michael. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning, Steve.
Just if you move that microphone, sure. There you go. State Street, that great street, surprised me to see some of the data that you're collecting about how many people actually are utilizing this area. Give us a sense of what it is that you're seeing.
Sure. We put up some technology on State Street, on the rooftops of State Street, with the support of Alderman Riley and the city. And the idea was to advance our mission, which is a higher-performing downtown experience, a Loop experience. And one of the things we think is important is to know exactly what's happening on the street. And so we installed our counters on State Street, and we're now counting pedestrians and vehicular traffic really on a 24/7 basis.
And so what are you seeing? What are the numbers?
Well, we have it would be helpful to know the district. So what we're counting is that traffic on State Street between Congress and Wacker. So it's about 9 blocks. And so we have a number that's kind of gives us a sense of how busy it is. So last week we had 1.7 million people on State Street. Now, this might be you going to work and then going home from work and walking through State Street or up and down State Street. So we're not saying that there's that many individual people, but it's kind of like your listeners. How many listeners do you have listening to the show? You have thousands and thousands of them, and they listen to it all the time. Mm-hmm. And so these are people that are kind of eyeballs on the street that have an opportunity for State Street merchants to take advantage of in terms of shopping or their offerings.
So from Congress to Wacker, from the north end of that, you have the loop, the L that runs there on Wacker south. So you would have the theaters.
Yep, correct.
You would have the part of the shopping district that's
correct.
There. Lots of things going on. Do you get a sense, can you tell if these people are carrying bags? Are they shopping? Or I know you mentioned that some of them could be going to work, but
right.
What is your sense?
So we receive a weekly report about the activity on the street. And we can see, we overlay what's going on the street or what's happening on the street to see what kind of impact it's had. So as you might imagine, as your listeners might imagine, the St. Patrick's Day parade festivities really jacked the numbers up, both at the CTA station intersections, but up and down the street. Running races come down on a Sunday afternoon and or Sunday morning, and you capture all of those bodies. And so you can really get a sense of how many people are down there at specific times of the day, specific times of the year. Over time, we'll get years' worth of data, and then we'll be able to see trend lines. Are we busier this year than we were last year? One of the things we have noticed is one of the blocks between Madison and Monroe is getting busier, and we believe it's mostly because of the Michael Jordan store, the new Foot Locker, and now Saks off Fifth Avenue is there.
State Street has always been a destination for folks who come to visit our city, even for people who live here. It's a destination. What are you finding in terms of you mentioned the Michael Jordan store, but are there other places that you see people going more than others?
Some of the intersections are way busier than others. And we think this has some relationship, of course, with the location of the trains coming from Union Station and the way people walk. So a lot of folks come in from the suburbs on the metro. They walk across the loop to get on the red line to go to a Cubs game. And so we can actually see that with the data that we look at on a weekly basis.
I'm curious about the technology. Is it just, do you monitor people, or how does that work?
Well, it's a UK-based company that will eventually live stream us data. Right now we get reports. And so it's up 24/7. They get the data. It's just numbers to them with a geographic location, and then they give us the reports. It's a newer technology, and it's something that we think a high-performing downtown ought to have. We ought to be able to tell property owners how many people walked in front of their storefront every day.
And also, just for the quality of life, it seems would be helpful, too. If you see something, if you get these numbers in real time and you see something going on, if you see a big sale going out at one of the stores, if you see an event or something happening, it could also be a public safety
It could be, yes. Yeah. In fact, we will share this information. We'd love to share the information with the Department of Transportation. I think you're absolutely right. Some of these intersections are much busier than others, and that may have an impact on how they stripe the street, how wide the crosswalk is, how the timing on the lights. I mean, I'm not a transportation person, but I would think it would be helpful.
It's interesting. The busiest days of the week seem to be going back and forth between a couple of days. What days are you seeing are busiest, and what does that tell you?
Well, as your listeners would imagine, the breaking of the weather in a warm day certainly brings out a lot more people, right? Tuesdays and Thursdays seem to be pretty busy. You know, I think Mondays people are pretty hunkered down. They don't come out of their office as much. You know, Friday they might leave a little early. It's spread out over time. One of the really interesting things about our street is that we have three peaks. So around 8 o'clock, we have a lot of people, 20,000 people on the street on a day, not a week, on a day. And then it goes up to about 25,000 people around lunchtime, as everybody might imagine. But here's the interesting part. At 6 o'clock, there's like 35,000 people. It's like everybody kind of meanders into work, but everybody leaves at the same time, right? It's a lot of people. So if I'm a retailer, maybe I put more wait staff on. Maybe I offer some more specials after work.
The number of total people per week is what really got me.
Right.
What did you find?
Well, so this is our what some people call the glamour number. We're not the only city doing this. So Times Square, for example, mm-hmm. you know, has a number that says like there's 7 million people per hour on Times Square. And what that means is anybody that's touched Times Square. So we're saying anybody that's come to State Street over the week, whether they walk through to go into their office 5 days a week, that we count them 10 times. We're just saying that that's how busy State Street is. And for our retailers, it's important for them to know that. Because those are eyeballs. Those are people looking at their storefront windows. And we can narrow it down to intersections and block faces. So we can tell Macy's exactly how many people on a Thursday afternoon at 4 o'clock walked in front of their place if they wanted that kind of detail.
And for the first time, we can quantify how great State Street is.
Yes, right. We can.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:49 on the WGN market desk this morning. Dow futures are pointing toward a lower open later this morning when the bell rings on Wall Street. Dow and S&P futures are lower. So are the NASDAQ futures. Let's get the latest on commodities now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Steve, good morning from Washington, where we had another interesting day yesterday in the morning at the U.S. Department of Agriculture, meeting with the various agency officials and with the agricultural ambassador at the trade representative office, Darcy Vedder, one of the brightest young ladies I've ever encountered when it comes to discussing trade. And the subject, of course, Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Agreement and the challenge it has in Congress. But she said she thinks, despite the lack of activity in Congress during this election year, she thinks it can be done, but she said the work must be done now with members of Congress on Capitol Hill to get it done before the August recess and then hopefully get it passed and signed by the president in the lame duck session after the August recess. So trade definitely on the front burner yesterday. Yesterday afternoon, the GMO labeling issue, and Steve Armstrong, who is the legal counsel with Campbell Soup Company, explained why Campbell Soup is beginning to label the products with GMO labeling. They say the Vermont law going into effect on July 1st makes it necessary for a company with national distribution to do that thing. Today we go to Capitol Hill and meet the chairman of the House Ag Committee, Mike Conaway, the chairman of the Senate Ag Committee, Pat Roberts. We'll visit with Congressman Rodney Davis of Illinois and longtime Congressman Colin Peterson from Minnesota. Another interesting day ahead. Have a good day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. 5:51, we're back on the opening bell this morning. Our conversation with the Loop Alliance, its executive director, Michael Edwards, in the staff with in the studio with us this morning. Michael, I'm interested to know, this data is obviously a very important tool. It's helpful in many regards. How are you using it? How will you use it going forward?
Well, every week we post the big number that we've been talking about on our website, so that anybody that goes to the loopchicago.com will be able to see how many people walk the street, if it's up or down, and then what's the busiest day in a number. So that's always pushed out there. We have great property owners on the street. They all pay into the SSA, a special service area. They're actually paying for this, and costs about $50,000 a year. And so they will get direct data for their particular intersections or whatever intersections they want. And that's really important information for them in terms of leasing their building, valuing their property, driving tenants into their buildings.
You mentioned something there called SSA.
Yes.
A special service area.
Correct.
Explain what that is and how the Loop Alliance came to be.
So the Loop Alliance came to be, it used to be the Greater State Street Council. And when the business folks put the, when your listeners would remember when State Street became a pedestrian mall, so when that was converted back to a street, there was an assessment put on the property owners to construct that, and then that morphed into the idea of taking care of it and managing it. And if you want to compete for investment, it's very Disney-like. You have to make a place cleaner, more beautiful, safer than people expect. And that's what we've done on State Street.
This, and I'm thinking sort of this is like a chamber of commerce of sorts for State Street.
But more.
You do a lot, lots more. And are you competing against the Mag Mile? Is there an SSA on the Mag Mile that you're competing against?
Well, there's not one on the SSA. There's been talk of doing that. No, we John Chico and the Magnificent Mile Association is one of the best organizations in the country. And we get along great with them. And we have dinner every month, and we just kind of talk about what's going on. We have similar problems, but different. The Magnificent Mile and North Michigan Avenue is a different street than State Street.
How do you compare in terms of visitors and people? Do you get a sense of?
Well, that's why we're counting.
Yeah.
So I think we are a street that the community has always shopped on. We're a little less visitor-oriented. I think the Magnificent Mile has a wonderful collection of retailers, high-end retailers, and many others. And so it tends to be a little bit more visitor and destination-focused. And both of those things make Chicago such a great city.
I remember a time when there was talk about, this was after we lost to that department store, and Macy's came in, and there were other things happening. People were like, oh, there goes State Street. And there was a lot of concern that we might lose the Great Street. Mm-hmm. But things turned around, and the future is bright.
Things are great. The retail has never performed, well, hasn't performed this good in 20 years. And so the cost of entry on State Street is high, but these pedestrian counts would indicate that there's lots of potential customers.
What does the future hold, would you say, if you had to predict 5 years from now, what's State Street going to look like?
Well, we're actually talking about what will State Street look like. As an organization that wants a higher performing downtown, we think the street's functioning well, but we're taking care of it every day. And we think that there might be new ways to think about just how a street operates. And I'm not exactly sure what that means, but placemaking and providing a better destination and an improved destination is important.
It always surprises me the number of people who haven't been downtown into the Loop in a long time, who avoid the Loop at all costs. You probably know some of those folks, if you're listening right now, who say, I don't go downtown. The question is, the demographics have changed so much.
Absolutely.
Tell us a little bit about the demographics.
Right. So the rise of the millennial generation, the baby boomers have increased wealth. And so there's these sort of new folks that are moving into downtown, folks that maybe have a second home that can afford that or don't want the big house out in the suburbs and want something a little bit more cosmopolitan and can afford to do that. And then the millennials just want to be around other millennials, and they want to be around 24/7 diverse populations. They want to live where they work, and so that's all driving increased residential traffic in downtown
and also commercial traffic. Things are coming
right,
in to take
right,
care of those people.
Right. So the rise of all of these great restaurants on Michigan Avenue and on State Street. There's lots of great places to eat in the Loop. I would encourage your listeners, if they haven't, this is a commercial here, if they haven't been to State Street or the Loop in a while, they really should check it out. They're not doing themselves a service not being there.
And you can visit loopchicago.com. You can also visit you're on Twitter at, is it Loop?
Chai Loop, chailoopalliance.com.
Chailoopalliance.com. Michael, it's good of you to be with us morning. Hopefully we can have you back in and get an update and see how things are going, and all the best to State Street.
Thank you.
Michael Fee Edwards is the executive director of the Chicago Loop Alliance.